This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit IMNCT.com for more information.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Behind the Video. This is episode number 66. We are moving into retirement territory, not quite. Joining me, as always, is my lovely and talented co-host from the other coast, Tim Street. Tim, from Los Angeles, how's it going?
It is going well. I'm really excited with our guest today. We have two guests on the show. One of them's kind of not really a guest.
One of them's staff, right?
Yeah. One of them's our producer, Jason.
Hi, everybody.
Jason, how's it going? Where are you Google hanging out today?
I'm just outside of Toronto, Canada.
And do you commute into the city? Do you work out of your house?
I work out of my house. I do web design and mostly WordPress. And then do podcasts on the side.
Very cool. And our other guest, big Disney aficionado Lou Mangello. Lou?
Is aficionado another word for nerd? Disney aficionado, yes. Nerd, it's okay.
Yes, and are you coming to us from Orlando?
I am. I am coming to you as the crow flies about a mile behind the Magic Kingdom.
A mile behind that? In my thinking, a mile north of
a mile
the Magic
north.
Kingdom?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's like Orange Grove territory in my mind.
Yeah. Not so much anymore.
Wow.
So, Lou, let's talk a little bit about what you've been doing here. So I met Lou through Tim at New Media Expo this year. We were at a party high up in the Rio, and Lou was telling me how he was a lawyer and doing the law thing and had a love of Disney World. And before you know it, he's got a podcast. He takes the family, moves them to Orlando, and he's made a business out of it. So Lou, what's the secret here? I mean, you found something really focused, right? And you've made it work. So tell us your story. How did you get started in this?
Yeah, so the secret is to do as I say, not as I do, because this was never sort of the game plan originally. I had always wanted to be a lawyer. I say that Al Pacino lied to me because I thought it was going to be like Injustice for All and L.A. Law, and it wasn't really like that at all. But I practiced law for about 10 years and enjoyed what I was doing. I had an IT consulting company on the side, and always having been in the service business, I said, I want to make something once and resell it. I watched too many infomercials, I guess. So the idea of a book came to be, and I sort of wrote the book that I wanted to read, which is about Walt Disney World. I had a love of Disney since I was three. I was going with my family every year. So I wrote the book I wanted to read. I wanted to see if I could just sort of challenge myself to write it and get it published. Found a publisher. Started my little two-page, brochure website back in 2004. And I kind of grew from there, articles, which were blog posts back then, and a community. And it was starting the community that made me realize that I was not the only dork sitting in my basement back in New Jersey that loved Disney as much as I did. Fast forward to 2005, I saw podcasting coming down the pike. I realized that the power of the medium, spoken word being so much, you could do so much more with it and convey the passion more than you could anything that you could write. Spent a lot of time explaining to people back in 2005 what a podcast was and how they could actually find it. And, fast forward a few years, it sort of accidentally grew into a business. I never really set out for it to be a business. I was commuting basically back and forth from New Jersey to Florida to do research and work on projects. And at one point, I took the leap of faith. I sold the house. I thought I was going to live in forever. I left my job. My wife left her job, and we packed up the Honda Odyssey and drove down to Florida, and been down here for about the past 4 years. And basically, I talk about Disney World full time for a living.
That's great, and the kids must have not had any problem with that move whatsoever, right?
Yeah, at least for like a week, you're the best dad in the world,
right? Does Disney World get old to them now that you're probably there, a couple times a month?
Yeah, it's not, because I specifically don't do that, right? I don't. We don't go every week. We don't go, all the time, because I don't want to be like, oh, I'm going to freaking Disney World again. So it still is fresh and it's new and it's exciting when I take them to the parks.
And, this is a very highly focused podcast. I mean, it's not even Disneyland. It is strictly Disney World. What's your demographic? Is it parents of children? Is it young kids? Like, who's listening to your show, and how has that impacted sponsorships?
It really is primarily Disney. You know, the show is WDW, like Walt Disney World Radio, but I do talk about, you know, I've sort of expanded because I do go out to Disneyland. We do group cruises every year. We go out to Hawaii. Again, a lot better than being a lawyer. and I, you know, when you start a show, you don't know who it's going to resonate with. And what I found over time, which I thought was very interesting, was that I have parents who listen. I have single solo travelers who listen, grandma, grandpa, and I have kids. I'm surprised how many young kids, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old, who, with their parents' permission, email me or come up to me at a meet or an event because they listen. I had a bus driver email me and said, you know, I play your show in the bus on the way to school, and the kids love it. And my show is 100% family-friendly, completely in the spirit of Disney, G-rated. So it's nice to know that it is accessible to younger kids, and it's, you know, because they want to be connected to the experience as well, too.
That's it, and it seems like it's working pretty well there. And how do you sell sponsorships, and what's your primary vehicle for revenue? It's not just advertising, right? I mean, you're doing other things as well?
Yeah, and again, this is sort of how the business happened accidentally when I got that first phone call from a potential sponsor. Said, oh, hey, listen, I love what you're doing. I'd love to sponsor your show. What do you charge? I went, oh, well, you know, let me get back to you and put together a proposal. I hung that my hung out. I'm like, now what the hell do I do?
Yeah, right. What do you charge?
Because I wasn't prepared for it. So, yeah, sponsorships is primarily my primary revenue stream. I am very, very selective into who I partner with because I believe really in sort of creating relationships with partners as opposed to just taking, you know, banner ads or whatever it is. I heavily vet my partners, and I look for obviously very organic relationships that bring value to my audience. And I take a very limited number so as not to dilute my message or their message as well, too. So that's where the primary revenue for the show comes from. I also have a number of products. I've written 2 books. I have apps. I've got a number of audio walking tours that I sell on CD and instant download. And, you know, again, accidental businesses that come from it, as sort of a tertiary business, I've started doing a lot of public speaking in terms of motivational stuff or stuff about Disney. I've done tours of the parks and things like that. So you never sort of realize the ancillary businesses that can come from it.
Seems to me, let me jump in here for a second,
sure.
But it seems to me with the sponsorship angle on this that you're highly targeted. That there would be a lot of folks out there that want to reach the people that are listening to your show. Anybody that has a product, a service for people headed to Walt Disney World or has something to market to them while they're at Walt Disney Right. World, that seems incredibly targeted.
Absolutely. You know, my audience does one thing. They go to Disney. That's where they spend their time. That's where they spend their money. If I started talking about other theme parks or WeekyWatchy, they would tune out, right, because this is what they care about. So you're right. From a sponsor's perspective, I do give them exactly who they're looking for, a very loyal, very targeted, engaged audience that I think I've built a relationship of trust with, and I think that carries a lot of value because they know that anybody that I present to them via sponsorships or anything that I talk about is somebody that I use and somebody that I trust and obviously very, like I said, organic to who they are and what they're doing. If I advertised, you know, Drobo or a hosting company, it wouldn't make any sense for them.
No, but I would imagine anybody that like advertises in Orlando Magazine or
right.
The Sentinel, for the most part, those people are trying to target people interested in Walt Disney World, and that's your audience, plain
Absolutely.
And simple. Whereas 100%. If they're in Orlando Magazine, they may be overspraying a little bit.
Absolutely, yeah, very much so.
I think it's important to point out, too, that you're separate from the Disney brand. So you're
Yes.
reporting on things that are happening at Disney. What's the relationship like with Walt Disney World? I would imagine this is helpful for their marketing efforts to some degree, right?
Yeah, I am independent, which gives me the freedom and flexibility to talk about what I want to, when I want to, without being sort of directed. But I have a great relationship with the company, which I am very grateful for. I think I sort of built up a level of trust and credibility with them over the years. And I think you're right. I think that companies and brands like Disney realize the value of what we as third-party content providers can produce. You know, if they say, hey, come eat at Pecos Bills, it's awesome, it's a marketing message. If I do a live restaurant review and I'm like, oh my God, this is the best freaking hamburger in the world, it carries a much different, you know, weight and message to it. So,
where I started. I started at the time Pecos Bills was connected to the Mile Long Bar, and when I was 16, I was pouring Pepsi, this before Coke, at the Mile Long Bar, and then delivering burgers and fries at Pecos Bills. That was my first gig.
I've come a long way, baby.
I could go for a burger right now. So,
I got to jump in here, Lou. I'm curious with the stuff that you're doing. You know, the relationship that you have with Disney. Do you know anything coming up? Any secrets that you might be able to tease or share with us this morning?
I'm not that guy, right? I'm not the guy who, because I'm very fortunate that I know enough people in the company that talk about stuff that they're working on, and I respect and appreciate that trust and confidentiality. I will speculate, right? I'll speculate. So we've heard about Avatar Land coming to Disney's Animal Kingdom. We've heard rumors that it's not coming. I know that plane is in flight. Avatar Land is under construction, and I, for one, am excited for what that possibility is going to bring, this idea of not a ride based on the movie, but this world of Pandora and this land that's going to have these bioluminescent lights at night, I think could be beautiful, and a great relationship, I think, with James Cameron is akin to one that they had with Lucas before they went out and bought it. I would not be surprised, and this is not a far stretch to say, that we will see more Star Wars coming to Walt Disney World. I would expect that Disney's Hollywood Studios is a natural fit for that. It just makes perfect sense, and there's certainly, as you know, a lot of room in there by Indiana Jones and back by Muppets that I think they could make a Star Wars land, and I will forever endeavor to try and get them to build just a little kiosk called Admiral Snack Bar, just so they could say, it's a snack.
It's a trap. Hey, I'll tell you what, if they build that Star Wars park, I'm moving down to Orlando too, yeah. And I'll be your roving reporter. I'll be dressed up as Yoda or something, and that's great. Hey, we got a question in the chat room from. By the way, you've brought in like a lot of people today, so we've got a lot of people
awesome.
Watching. So you have people hanging on every word. They want to know that you got some more secrets. Let them rip. But Jim Lawler said, Lou, I love your work. What type of law were you practicing, and what was the main reason for making the switch? And you touched on a little bit of that, but what were you doing law-wise?
I chased ambulances, pretty much.
Okay.
No, I can't. I'm kidding. I had a general litigation practice, so it was great because I got to do a little bit of everything. Somebody might come to you for a real estate transaction, and they could come back for workers' compensation. I would do bankruptcy. I would do municipal court and federal court. So it was something different every day. And at the time, I also had a side business, because obviously I don't like sleeping very much. I had a small business IT consulting company. Really, as companies were starting to network and build websites, I wanted to be their one sort of point of contact. And as I was juggling these real two full-time careers, something had to give. I was in practice with my dad, who was very supportive of my business. He said, look, go do it. You can come back if you need to at half salary. I'll take you back. So I left. I did the IT thing for a while, and then I was actually the chief technology officer at a medical imaging company before I left that job to move to Florida.
Wow. So
I was waiting to hear. I sued Walt Disney World for people that slipped on frozen bananas.
And this was the compromise that we reached in getting there. And you're media savvy. I mean, did you always have an aptitude for doing radio and video, or was this something you had to learn?
I very much learned on the fly. I always enjoyed, you know, I actually started off in college. I shouldn't even admit this. I started off in college as a theater major, and then I realized, what the heck am I doing? So I switched over and went back to pursuing the law. But I think when you talk about something, and I hate to keep using the overused word, when you talk about something that you're passionate about, I think it becomes very easy. And when you feel like you're just having a conversation with, you know, people, to use a Jersey euphemism, like you're sitting around a diner in New Jersey just talking about Disney World, it's very easy.
And what did your friends think when you told them you were doing this? You know, because we've heard of people like just moving away and chasing a dream, but this right. is like this was must have been a shock to some of them.
Yeah.
Right?
They're like, "What are you, a freak? What are you like?" First of all, when I said I was going to do a podcast, they're like, "Wait a minute, you're going to sit alone in your basement and talk about Disney World for an hour a week to people that you don't know if they're listening or not?" And I said, "Yeah, pretty much. It's what I'm going to be doing." And then when I said, "Listen, I'm packing up the family truckster and I'm moving to Florida. I don't have a job. My wife doesn't have a job. My kids aren't in school. I'm not really sure where we're going to live yet. My parents are going to find me a house while I'm on the way down." Some were supportive. Some were like, "Yeah, great idea. See you in a couple of weeks when you come back."
Right.
But you need to take a leap of faith, man. You have to have a leap of faith. You have to have a parachute and a plan behind it. But I was very fortunate to have a supportive family and infrastructure behind me. So,
and now Lou has supportive fans. We didn't really mention this, but Lou does these meetups where listeners of his podcast will come to live events in person, and they show up in droves. I mean, I just happened into one time because a friend of mine was attending one, Jen Selke, and her husband, Brian, they were there in Vegas, and I show up, and there's like 75 people mobbing Lou, and I'm like, who are all those people talking to Lou? And they're like, she's like, those are his fans. This is a meetup.
And I think that's what's really important to mention here, too, is that for a lot of successful independent content creators, you are a brand and a person, right? There's the two are almost interchangeable, and I think that you've done very well at that, where you have the brand, but you also have the person. And, you know, you must feel the tug to do more. And how do you plan to grow into other parks with other shows that are separate from WDW Radio, or are you going to just kind of stick to what's working?
Right now, I'm sticking to what I do, which is primarily Walt Disney World and touching on the other Disney parks, because I think they're all sort of interconnected and they're part of that Disney experience. I know with the name WDW Radio, it's sort of a misnomer because I talk about more than Walt Disney World, and radio is what the idea I had back in 2005, but I'm obviously doing video and in-person stuff. I'm going to kind of stick with that, but I have a lot of ideas for ways to continue to grow what I'm doing and reach more people. Certainly would like to expand into other mediums, especially as the line between what is online and what's on your TV is starting to get blurred. I think there's an opportunity to reach people who love this product, they love this brand, and they can't really get enough of it. They're hungry for content, and I'm going to try and deliver to them in a few other different ways.
Jason, you're starting a podcast on SeaWorld, right? And it's not just about the performing of the animals, but how to barbecue them.
Well, I'm going to try a new format and actually do the podcast in the water with the animals.
Nice, love it.
There you go.
That'd be great.
That's great, and you got to get some high end equipment for the underwater component there. But that's fantastic.
That might be a bit of research.
It might take a little bit of research there. Well, Lou, would you mind sticking around so we can talk about some news?
I'd love to. Thank you. Yeah.
Excellent. And I'll tell you, Lou's brought more people onto this live broadcast than I've ever seen. So this is great. We should have you on every week, and it'll help our fledgling podcast about everything that we talk about. So Tim, the Emmys are tonight. Are you watching or going? What's the scuttlebutt out there?
It's one of those things where once you know somebody that's won an Emmy, it's fascinating. our buddy Bernie Sue and Jay Bushman, they both walked away with Emmys. Last week they had an Emmy show for the creative arts, so different things that won't be in tonight's broadcast. But tonight's broadcast looks like it'll be fun. I'll be watching from home. I don't want to go brave the crowds and stand in the crowded downtown area at the Nokia. But it looks like it'll be fun. A lot of people are concerned about the fall TV schedule taking a dip. I mean, audiences are being lost left and right, and so the Emmys is you know, here to try to build viewership on new shows. And unfortunately, we have some shows that'll probably get awards tonight that are going away. So we'll see how that plays out.
And Jason, this is big for Netflix too, because I think there are two shows up on the nominations. For Netflix, I don't know if Orange and the New Black got one, but I know House of Cards is certainly in competition, right?
Yes, it'll be interesting to see the take between broadcast television and television in the new with Netflix and Amazon trying to bring TV shows to a new generation.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens tonight. This could be a very big night for online media. Probably, you know, not the kind of stuff that we do, but it's certainly, I think the rising tide raises all boats there. And so this week, you know, we were looking for our tops of the week, and the YouTube charts are all out of whack again. So we're going to take a look, though, at the TubeFilter Top 50, which really hasn't changed all that much. If you're into Katy Perry, then you're going to be happy to know that she is topping the YouTube channel charts this week. She has a new album out, which kind of sounds like the old one, I guess. But, hey, if you're into Katy Perry, it's great. Miley Cyrus is still up there. And, you know, I'm glad we got Lou on because Tim and I were just fascinated with this number three, which is the Disney Collector. Have you heard of this Disney Collector person?
No, I haven't.
So she is the top number three channel on YouTube. And I'll pull it up real quick. What she does is basically does these reviews of Disney toys. So it's more on the collector side than it is on the theme park side. But her, you know, you don't even see her. She just does this voiceover, and she demos the toy. And apparently, this has become, I'm going to skip through the ad here. Apparently, this has become a really big deal for kids who are, you know, just watching her channel to see what these toys do. And she does a really thorough review of it. It's fascinating. So here you go. She just opens the box up and kind of steps through it. And, I mean, it's really pretty.
Well, she does it all in character voice. So it's like, oh, cookie, Play-Doh. Oh, very good.
She did that. It would probably double the viewership, but it's amazing. I mean, she's got her, you know, she's definitely got her keywords down. I mean, she knows how to market this stuff. But this one here, this was from a few weeks ago, 5.7 million views.
Wow.
And she's just like opening up this thing and just looking at it. You know, it's pretty amazing. So, you know, maybe there's a toy outlet there for you to go into there. So she's number three. What I found interesting, though, was you know, beyond that, Sky does Minecraft and the movie trailers and stuff. But something was interesting, though, is that this week, according to the Wall Street Journal, and you can actually see this channel up on YouTube, George Takei was hired by AARP to do like a little web series, and it's got nothing to do with AARP. But they, you know, it was interesting. They found a senior citizen who's very popular among young people to do a video. And Tim, have you followed this at all? I mean, what do you think about AARP here? Are they trying to reach out to new potential
absolutely. And
audiences here?
They called in the professionals, our buddy Kai over at Portal A. Behind this web series. Yeah, so it's exciting to me to see where this goes and how it reaches a new audience.
It's really interesting. And, you know, one thing that I found, too, I don't know if you've logged into your AdWords recently, but in AdWords, they are now automatically creating remarketing lists based on people that watch your videos. So there's potential here that if you do watch one of these George Takei videos, they can hit you with other messages.
Adult diapers coming my way.
Yeah, right. they also have been very active, and I think where this might be going is they've been very active on Social Security and Medicare issues. And although young people are not thinking about these things necessarily right off the bat, I could see perhaps them using that remarketing list to building that out. The viewership isn't too big yet, but I think with George Takei's audience, once he really starts pushing it on his social media channels, he'll have something there. So we'll see where that goes. This next one, Live Nation, has launched a web series called The Rider Challenge with Ford. This is one that Jason found. So Jason, what's up with this story here?
Well,
I'll put you on the spot.
Well, no, it's very interesting that Ford has really stepped into new media and really trying to try and reach their product out to a very wide audience, and an audience that is very savvy with new media.
It sure is, and they've been, you know, they were at New Media Expo when I met Lou and Tim out there. They were pretty making a very big statement about trying to do different things with marketing, and this is kind of a reality show that's going to feature the Lumineers and a lot of celebrities in this thing. So I'm sure that will succeed quite nicely there. This next one is, I'm going to throw this one out to Tim. What does the Fox say? It's been 40 million viewers. Is that right, Tim?
Yeah, and it made its way onto Ellen. So Ellen is all into if you haven't seen it yet, watch it. It's addictive. This Norwegian comedy troupe does a video that kind of makes fun of pop culture and pop videos, and it starts out with a animal furry party where they're all dressed as different animals. I didn't see any little Ewoks there, Lou, but they start out that way, and you know the cow goes moo and the fish goes blub blub. But what does the fox say? And it's a very addictive song. It's a fun little video, and getting a lot of views. It really blew up about, I'd say, 3 weeks ago. Once you make it on Ellen, you know, you're part of pop culture at that point.
Right, you're on the way. It moves pretty quickly. And look, you've been doing. Yeah, go ahead, Jason.
Can I step in with this? I think a very important point of this story is for sponsors or for companies that want to do viral videos is to not project 50 million viewers right away. Work on what you want, what your message wants to be. Make it fun, and if it goes viral, it goes viral.
And that's very true. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And I'll tell you what, I found, you know, not going viral but getting a lot of moderate number of views on a lot of stuff can also be equally valuable to you in your efforts as well. So, you know, don't always focus on top of the ticket there. But Lou, I was noticing you've started a whole new YouTube strategy where you're doing these minute-long little tips and things around Disney World. I saw one where you can start finding some of the Easter eggs and some of their some of their buildings and stuff. So how's that been going for you so far, and what led to that decision?
Yeah, so I knew obviously a long time ago that you need to be everywhere, right? You can't just do one thing. And I was doing the podcast and the blog, and I wanted to start doing more and more video. So I was releasing videos every so often as I could. But the problem with them was that I was trying to cover too much, I thought. I was trying to give you the whole bag of jelly beans at one time. And I think people clearly like small, easy to consume, list-based kind of things where they get a good nugget of information and then can move on. Our attention span is clearly, very small. So I came up with the idea of doing Disney in a minute. And the concept was a minute, give or take, long video about anything from the top five snacks in the Magic Kingdom to, top three ways to save money to, a quick little hidden treasure about the Indiana Jones epic stunt spectacular, whatever it is, and really gives people a chance to sort of tour the parks, get something in a quick and easy way, and obviously, I want to make it easy to consume on the mobile devices as well, too, with a quick download.
And that's a really, I think, especially now with so many mobile devices out there, that while you're at the park, if you could find a quick hit video or and I'm sure some related text about something to do where they're at, then they can do that. Have you looked at any like location-based videos that you could do based on where they're standing in the park?
I haven't, but now you've just given me something else to think about and research. So I was like, wow, that's an awesome idea.
There you go. So we'll follow up next week on that one. So moving on to movies, kind of a disappointing box office weekend if you were shooting for the Battle of the Year, which was the number five movie. This is a movie about breakdancing, which probably would have done better in the 80s than today, but $4.6 million on its open, and I guess according to Deadline.com, that was pretty lackluster. Number four is Instructions Not Included. This is a Spanish language film. It's only in 978 theaters, but it beat Battle of the Year, which was significantly greater funded, and it's coming in at $34.2 million for the week. The Family is slipped to number three, $5.7 million for the weekend, $34 million overall. Insidious, we talked about that last week. That's at $14.2 million, $50 million cum. And Prisoners opened up at $21.4 million. So they're still bringing in some millions there. But the MPAA, according to The Wrap, is not happy with us internet people. In fact, they're saying Google is not doing enough to thwart piracy. So, Tim, what do you feel about this whole thing about the MPAA continually?
They're really saying that Google is responsible for piracy by leading people to the piracy websites, and Google is saying no, they're not leading people there, and that they have an algorithm in place to keep people from not finding these pirate sites. But if you look at the research, if you look at what people are doing, is they want to find the show that they want to watch. And if it was available on Netflix, if it was available on HBO Go, if it was available someplace legal that people could get it, then they'd get their money and the pirate sites wouldn't show up. So I think the lesson to the studios is make the stuff available and make it searchable and have an easy way for people to pay for it, and they will.
Amen. Yeah. There's nothing more to say than that, because I think that is exactly the problem right now. And even look at something like Redbox, which is very reasonably priced. It takes a month or more to get the movies to the Redbox out of all these stupid agreements that they do. And if they just gave people what they want, sell them what they want, not even give it to them, they will do gladly fork their money over. So there's another story here that Jason found, and I'll let Jason kick this one off. The CBS and Amazon, they teamed up with Under the Dome, which I've heard mixed reviews about, but basically it's a Stephen King adaptation on CBS of a dome that falls on top of the town and they can't get out. I guess it's been running on Amazon Prime in addition to running on CBS. And there was other shows that have done this. I know that Heroes did it with Netflix and ABC a while back. So, Jason, what's up with this? Why is there so much controversy over this thing?
Basically, what is being said is that it's really not allowing the show to be seen by people who don't have the Amazon subscription.
Okay. So that's the big...
That's basically the big hoopla, is that it's in a very tight media, and people who don't have access to Amazon don't see the show after it's aired.
Oh, I see. Right. So, so you can't see it on CBS's website. You have to have an Amazon account to go and watch.
Just get Amazon Prime. You get free shipping. It's a bargain. It's awesome.
It is a bargain. It is awesome. I use it all the time. In fact, I had them ship me like for my wife's birthday. See, my wife is a black belt, and she wanted a punching bag, and they shipped it like overnight for free. It's this huge thing. So, and it weighs a ton. You got to put water in it too, but it was pretty funny. So. So that is that. So we've had Lou. Thanks for joining us today. We do have some apps and tips of the week, though. I'm going to kick mine off here. I've got this thing. So, you know, in addition to the MPAA really ticking us all off, Comcast can occasionally be the ire of our existence. And I got this thing here. It's called the HD Home Run. And what this does is gets around Comcast's. They have these encryption algorithms they apply now to their stuff. So up until, I don't know how it is where you guys are, but up until last week, I could just turn my TV on and pull down HD stuff as part of my cable plan just through my television. I didn't have to have a box or any of this other junk. And then one morning I woke up and my wife was telling me where TVs don't work. And sure enough, they scrambled every channel, including the ones that I was getting as part of my package. And I call it Comcast, I have to go get a box, right, for you know, $7 and then the HD access fee, and I've got three televisions in the house. I'm looking at $20 or $30 more a month, and I said, no way. So I looked into seeing, like, what are the alternatives out there? And this thing is called the HD Home Run. It's $150. You put in this cable card, which Comcast will give you if you have a plan that includes a low-definition converter box. You put it in there, you plug it into your Ethernet, and what it does is it essentially puts your cable onto your local network. And if you have like an older but functional notebook or PC laying around, you can install Windows Media in there, and you can then network it to your Xboxes. So now that you get live television, you get like a full-blown HD DVR network in your house for extra money.
That sounds so easy to do. My grandmother would love that.
Yeah, and this is the problem, is that, let me just put it this way. It ended, the weekend has ended with me drilling holes through the floor and running wires. Because the wireless wasn't supporting this thing well enough. So this is not easy, but if you want to stick it to the man, that's how you do it. And here's the kicker. Comcast will give you $2.50 a month for doing this yourself. So what more could there be to do, you know, to this than that? So so I'm still in the process of working it out.
I see why your wife has a punching bag now.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really, and this is still not working. I've gone to the hardware store three times. My floor has like more like layers to it than I thought, and I'm in deep trouble. So I have to finish this project up this afternoon. But once it's working, it's going to be great. The only problem is that it takes your TV about an extra 5 minutes to boot because you have to load the Xbox up, and you got to. So yeah, there's no easy way to thwart the man, but there's a process by which you can make it work. I will add though that some channels you can view on your computer with this thing, and it's a lot easier. But it's still not good enough for my wife, so I'm going to keep working on this thing. So now, Jason, from the home of the BlackBerry, Canada, and Toronto, no less, which is where they come from. Horrible week for BlackBerry. They've had this big announcement that they are getting out of the consumer market completely. I just reviewed the Q10. I thought it was a great phone for what it is. And unfortunately, it's too little too late. But they were going to launch an app called BB Messenger, which would allow all these BlackBerry Messenger people, those that are still left on it, to use the BlackBerry system on their iPhone and on their Android phone. And something bad happened, Jason. What was that?
Well, I mean, I think it is a smart move for them, be it a little late. But it's set to design to keep people on BlackBerry so they can communicate with people that have Android or iPhones. But basically what happened is they were supposed to launch it yesterday, and there were so many fake BlackBerry Messenger apps, and there was the real one that got leaked online ahead of schedule, which broke the Android app and forced BlackBerry to cancel their launch, and they're going to launch it at some point in the near future.
So the actual version of this thing got clobbered by the fakes.
Yes,
we overloaded their
fakes
servers.
The fakes and the leaked one broke the official app.
Wow, well that is brutal for BlackBerry. They don't need that this week. So that's unfortunate, but, you know, I'm getting my iPhone 5S. I didn't get it yet. I refuse to stand online. I don't know about anyone else on this call, but I avoided the iPhone line. I did that once by accident, and I will never do it again. Here's the thing with this.
Drill a hole in your
baby. Yeah, right, exactly. I drilled right through the iPhone. And I did this thing a couple years ago when the 4 came out. I pre-ordered the phone, and there was an option for in-store pickup. I said, I'll be driving by the Apple store that morning. I'll just go and pick it up. And, you know, there was a 3.5-hour wait. Even if you had one you paid for sitting in the store, you had to sit on this horrible line. The news came by, I kind of hid my face because I just didn't want to be seen with that. So I said, never again. So I'm going to wait a couple extra days. But you know what I found, and I'm sure, Lou, you've seen this too, that the obscure stuff that you review about your topic gets more traffic than the things that everybody's going to be looking at, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The still to this day, one of the shows that is downloaded and commented on the most is the top 10 smells of Walt Disney World. I could talk about the opening of the new attractions all day long, but people are like, oh, it smells like the musty water in Pirates. That's the thing that...
That gets everybody going. Yeah, I like the... Yeah, there's a couple of definite smells there. Then you got the turkey legs that people walk around with. So Lou, where can people find you and all the things that you're doing?
All the Disney-related stuff that I do is at wdwradio.com, and then my personal website is loumongello.com.
And I'm going to be checking that out in a few years. I've got a 4.5-month-old daughter, but as soon as she's old enough, I'm going to be taking her to Disney World, so I'm going to start brushing up on all the Disney stuff very soon there. So thanks for joining us, Lou, and thanks for bringing all your friends with you, too. It was a good good turnout today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Jason, where can people find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Jason Perrier, JasonPerrier.
And you can go to him with all your WordPress needs, and he's been excellent for us because he's out there all week finding stuff for Tim and I to talk about on Sundays. So thank you and very much for all the work you're doing. And you can finally put the face and voice to the name that we announce at the end of every show. So, and Tim, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me at OneTimStreet, either on Twitter or .com. And there's a rumor. It's not official yet, but you might be able to find me at Walt Disney World during the first week of October, directing something. I can't tell you what it is yet, but maybe in Orlando, Lou.
All right. If there's a rumor, we may have to get together for a meal then.
There you go.
That's great. That's cool. So, well, enjoy that. It's a good time to go visit Florida. And you can find me at lonseidman.com, LonSeidman. That same spelling will also get you me on Twitter. And I do gadget reviews, which is why I've got all this retro stuff behind me. So if you have, whatever pops into my front door, I just review it down here in my basement lair. So check me out
there. I want to see you review that punching bag.
Yeah, we're going to do that, because I was sick of being the punching bag. So we've got a replacement now. So when we get it set up, we will have her beat the crap out of it. And I think that'll do pretty well, actually. So
I'll
get my wife into karate instruction. She does Kempo, which is a very aggressive thing. She is very, and it's funny, you would look at her and think, oh, she's, you know, she could never hurt a fly, but she is a killer. She hasn't killed anyone yet, but anyone who ever crosses her, it's going to be bad. You can also find our show behindthevideo.com, and that links to our Google Plus community. We're all about the Google Plus, as our viewers today, so you can find us there. If you join the community, every week we'll send you a reminder of when this show will air, so you can check us out. We're also on Stitcher Radio, on iTunes, and anywhere you can find Lou, you could probably find us. So add us to your podcast queue, and we hope to get some more listeners of our show there. So this will do it for this edition of Behind the Video. We are a wrap.
Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JasonPerrier. Behind the Video is a production of 8th Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.